Today, answers matter more than ever before. That's why IBM is helping businesses manage customer questions with Watson Assistant. It's conversational AI designed to work for any industry. Let's put smart to work. Visit ibm.com/Watson Assistant.
Sedano with you here on 710 ESPN. Mama Momo hanging out today. Ramona Shelburne in, as she is every Wednesday, presented by Progressive Insurance, and all our guests appear via the Shell Pennzoil performance line. So, Ramona, you had something that you wanted to add about fans in the NBA. Can you hold that thought for one more second?
Okay.
Because we've got some breaking news. The Minneapolis Star Tribune is reporting right now that Attorney General Keith Ellison, who was added to this George Floyd case, they brought the top person in the state to litigate this, has elevated the charges against former Minneapolis police officer Derek Chauvin to second-degree murder. It was originally third. And the three other officers to be charged with aiding and abetting murder, according to the Minneapolis Star Tribune. So there you have it.
Aiding and abetting, yeah. Okay.
Yeah. So,
you know, it was interesting. I was thinking about that a lot. You know, all these protests have been going on, and it brought me back to when I was covering the Donald Sterling story, you know, with the NBA, mm-hmm. and how upset players were until Adam Silver banned him for life, right? It took, you know, remember the tapes come out, I think it was right after game three, and there's like a couple of days in between the tapes coming out and the start of game four. So they go play game four. The Clippers, you know, have a sort of a mild protest where they take off their shirts and throw it down in the middle of the arena. Mm-hmm. But they play the game, and you know, a lot of people thought they should have boycotted the game or they shouldn't have played at all. But one of the things that was going on behind the scenes was Adam Silver was talking to Chris Paul directly, talking to Doc Rivers, talking to everybody, saying, "Listen, I'm gonna act on this. I'm gonna do this as fast as I can, and the punishment's gonna be severe. You just have to give me a couple of days to do an independent investigation to corroborate, you know, these tapes. This really is him on tape. Circumstances this was made." They just had to get their ducks in a row legally because they were going to basically ban him for life. And it was really hard because the players were under tremendous pressure to do something really strong. And they, but I think it was because Adam Silver kept telling them, We're going to do something. We're going to do something. And they had to trust him. You know, he had to become a man of his word, and they had to act really quickly. But it's so different than what has happened with the charging the police officers, right? Where there was an investigation, it was condemned, but there was no faith that the charges were going to be elevated and that the other three officers were going to be charged, right?
Right.
Like there was no like, well, we got to do our own investigation. There was no like, no, listen, we're going to do something, right? And I understand you don't want to prejudice an investigation, right? That, you know, if that's legal stuff, like you don't want to say we're going to charge them and just sit tight because then that's their grounds for appeal, right? Like you had a prejudiced investigation. But it's just really hard when you don't have people in power, like from the Police Officers League or mm-hmm. or officials just completely denouncing the actions of those officers,
yeah, right?
It's taken till now. Like, I think a lot of the protests, I don't know, do you think we would have seen as many protests if we would have come out and had these charges filed within a day or two? I mean, it's over a week now.
Do I think that, I think the situation being escalated based on the protests, I think that's what led to the Attorney General getting directly involved,
yeah.
Which I think then put us in this situation where real justice can be sought.
Yeah. I mean, it just sometimes things don't move fast enough now.
Right.
Like the punishment, the investigations, all that. It doesn't move fast enough. Like you know, like the situation with James Dolan and whether the Knicks were going to put out a statement. Like if you're wondering whether you should, it's probably too late. The answer is yes, and you should have done it yesterday,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
Like, and by the time he finally comes out with a statement yesterday, the damage has already been done. You're the only guy who didn't do it. Why didn't you do it? You had another thing saying you weren't going to. And then by the time he finally says, "Oh yeah, this was terrible," nobody believes you because you only did it under duress,
right?
So I think you know one of the things we learn in today's world is just like you just have to act very quickly. You just have to take decisive action very quickly. And when you're not prepared to take that decisive action, you have to over communicate.
Yes.
To say things.
Yeah. So people understand why time is lapsing for sure.
Yeah.
So no easy transition. We were talking basketball and the return of the NBA, but I wanted to make sure that we discussed this because it is breaking news and it's the most important story in the country right now. So I'm glad we discussed it and kind of gave people the opportunity to understand what's happening in real life and in real time. And we were also discussing previous to this, the NBA's return. People are calling in, asking you questions. We still would like to employ people to continue to call in if they have any questions about the resumption of the NBA. You've got a lot of the answers, if not all of them, at 877-710-ESPN. A caller a second ago was asking about the potential of fans returning. And you and I agree that if it's going to happen, it's going to be next season, right? It's not going to be now. It's not going to be in the bubble outside of family members and things like that. But you had something to add to that before we went to break.
Well, I think that one of the biggest issues that the NBA is facing is not just today, but next year. I think next year is we have to get from here to July 31st, right? With enough people, teams safely intact that people still feel good about resuming after we've gone through training camps, et cetera. But next year is a whole other bottle of worms, right? I mean, it's a whole other issue because, you know, they played 75% of the season. They've collected the revenue. It's not as big of a loss.
Yeah.
If you don't have fans next year, that is really going to affect the bottom line in the NBA. And you can't make that up with TV revenue. And one owner was telling me, you know, you really can't just do this idea of like 5,000 fans and then, you know, spread it all out in the arena. It costs so much to just open the building and have ushers there and people there that having socially distanced crowds, like, you know, smaller but socially distanced, like if you have 5,000 people in a 20,000 seat arena, right, and they all sat 6 feet apart or whatever it is and wore a mask, they actually lose money on games like that. Like, unless those five, you're not going to get people to pay that much, right, to be able to offset the 15,000 people you're not having there. So the only answer seems to be through testing, which means you'd have to test every single person who comes into a game. And it would have to be a rapid test. It couldn't just be like you took a test yesterday and you came back clean because you could have picked up COVID anywhere along the way, right? Mm-hmm. The idea is you would test fans upon entry. And when we get the testing capability, which I believe we will, I know there's a couple of companies right now that are working on rapid tests that give very accurate answers within 15 minutes, right? When we get that, I think there is a path for fans to come back. And I know a lot of teams right now are working on it. You know, there's on how we would do it safely, how much that would cost. You know, obviously it would be very expensive. You'd have to have really strict, strong protocols. The idea being you're going to have to test 20,000 people coming into your game every time. So show up wearing a mask, stand in line, take your test, wait in another area until you get cleared. When you get cleared, you get a little bracelet that says you're cleared. You can go in. If you're not cleared, you get sent home. I mean, that's going to take some time. Like, you might have to show up 2 hours before a game. But it's also kind of a public service if you're able to test that many fans and do that all the time. Right?
Yeah.
I mean,
that's like, that's a good point.
20,000 people every day.
Yeah, that is a good point. I don't think there's any question about that.
So there's people working on that right now, George. I know it seems crazy to think that we could have fans next year, but if we're delaying the start of next season until Christmas Day, you know,
and you have the proper protocols in place potentially, right?
Protocols.
Look, in countries in Asia, they have temperature checks, as we've talked about, right? Like, they have, you know, in some cases, even more rapid testing. You know what I'm saying? Like, they have some of these things in place. And perhaps, you know, now listen, I think as a people, those countries are more disciplined in some cases than sometimes we are. We can be a bit frivolous. Yeah. And I think that becomes the challenge, right? And so I think that. But I do think that there are potentially opportunities for this to be the case. I don't know how quickly, to your point, but I do think that it is a possibility.
Yeah, and I think it's a possibility, and I think it's more of a – I think there's a lot – there's people working on it because let's say it costs $25 million to test everyone, to test every fan the entire year long, right? Well, that sounds like a lot of money, but what if that makes you $200 in revenue?
Yeah.
What if that's just the cost of doing business? What if the NBA can say, okay, I don't think every single team in the league can afford this. We're going to make a fund to where we're going to partner with six different testing companies, and they're all going to create enough tests for fans coming in and out of our arenas every day. And they'll sell it to us at a different cost, right? But we're going to have this rapid testing, and that's going to be how people have fans. What if we do that in a way that feels safe, and you can have a fund that's paid for by every team chipping into it, right? Maybe a certain amount of revenue is diverted into the fund to pay for testing for fans. I mean, you got to have some creative ideas with this. It can't just be the richest owners have to pay for this and the other ones have no fans. That doesn't work. But I think that those are the kinds of questions that owners in all sports are looking at.
Yeah, you have to be creative. I don't think there's any question. Let's go to the phones. People have questions for you, Momo. Let's go to Anthony in Palmdale. Anthony, what do you got, man?
Hey, George. Hey, Ramona.
How you doing?
Summer League one time, Momo. I'm good. And I yelled, Momo, I love you. And you looked at me like I was crazy.
I probably didn't hear you. It's really loud in the gym.
So I got a question about next season. I know they're against player rest during season, but they're going to have a shortened off season. So are they taking that into account for next season?
Yeah. Like, I know you're right. You're right. It's going to be a really condensed off season for the two finals teams, right? Theoretically, you could be playing into October, and then all of a sudden next year would start Christmas Day. So you'd probably have like a month off. But that really only applies to the two finals teams. The other teams would be done in September or so, at some point. So that's a little bit more time. It's just going to make for a really condensed free agency period. And then I think the other big question is, what do we do with the draft?
Right.
Are we waiting until after this year's over, or are we going to just, you know, what are the guys who are entering the draft going to do the whole time? I'm sure that teams like the eight teams that are not in it, like the Warriors and the Knicks, all those teams,
Timberwolves,
I'm sure they would want to do a draft now so they can get that player into their program. Right. Of course.
Yeah. Yeah. You know? That's an interesting challenge that I don't think enough people are talking about. Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a good point.
So initially I thought this might be a great time to try free agency before the draft, like switch the NBA calendar. It's something that people have talked about for years. It makes a lot of sense. But now when we're talking about playing into October, I don't know if it makes sense to do the draft that late.
Yeah, I don't think so either. But, I mean, you may not have a choice this time around is kind of the issue. Let's go to Enrique in Santa Ana. What's up, Enrique?
Hey, how's it going, George, Momo?
Yeah.
My question is, I've heard a lot of solutions about how the NBA is moving forward with the plan, with the pandemic, and moving to Orlando and having all the precautions in place. But I think moving forward, I think not this season, kind of already planned out, but next season, has the NBA, have the teams discussed kind of what plans they have in place to force step one rest happen? You know, if this is something that's going to be feasible, then again, takes place, games are, you know, in jeopardy, especially with the downtown, the kind of the predicament they're in, you know, and all these arenas being so close to proximity. So, I think that's my question for both of you guys. Yes, could have the insight on it.
George, I can't hear him.
I couldn't hear. Know? Yeah, he was kind of coming in and out.
I'm trying real hard to hear what he said. I could hear bits and pieces.
Yeah, I couldn't make out what he was saying. Laura, could you make out what he was saying, or Greg?
I was having trouble. It was
I got a little bit of it. So, because also he told me on the phone.
Okay.
He was telling me that he wanted to know how the teams were going to keep the safety of the players because they're going to be in such close proximity. And that was one. And two, Momo, was because COVID is obviously a huge deal within the organization, but also this racial tension, how the NBA was addressing that within the bubble.
Okay, go ahead. Cool.
So how are teams going to keep players safe? Well, there's going to be daily testing and temperature checks. So it's not just what one owner told me, they're going to overtest, right? Like, you're going to be tested so much you won't believe it, right? It's going to be, you know, a test every day. There's going to be temperature checks. There's going to be, you know, just constant monitoring. I think there may be even like some rapid testing and an overnight test because they want to, you know, sometimes there's false negatives, right? So you want to have two different kinds of tests sometimes, not even just the same test, because, you know, you want to avoid the possibility of somebody testing who is positive, testing, having a false negative, and then spreading it. Temperature checks will back it up. So, like, let's say you're tested at like 6 p.m., but you have a temperature check in the morning, and we don't have the results back from your 6 p.m. test yet. But the temperature check shows 99.6. Well, they're going to say, it's a little high. You know, when your temperature goes above 99.5, that tends to be the number that they get a little bit worried about. Doesn't sound like a lot, but it is.
Yeah.
But in Florida,
yeah, much like California, they're going to have to let people be inside for a minute, because if they've been outside, your temperature is going to rise anyway.
Exactly.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So I think they're right. All those things will have to be done in a controlled environment from a temperature perspective too.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, I think they're going to be doing that. All the employees there are going to have to be subjected to similar testing protocols and similar safety protocols. One thing I heard was, like, let's say the hallways of the hotel, right? They are going to regulate the hallways so that you're not, like, passing people in the hallways, you know, all the time. You're going to make sure they don't get too crowded.
Yeah.
You're going to do things like
green light, staff, red light.
Yeah, green light, red light. the staff is not supposed to go in rooms, I think. That was one thing I heard.
As in, like, the hotel staff.
The hotel staff, yeah.
Yeah.
You know, they're not supposed to go in players. That could get 3 months in a hotel without, you know.
Well, there would have to be at some point the ability to clean the room, you know what I mean? But they'd have to do it while maybe the player is at a game, you know what I'm saying?
At a game and some kind of sterilization or something. All beyond just the normal housekeeping. I mean, there's going to be all sorts of protocols in there. I mean, and then there's also, I think, a big question about what do we do about older people who are in this bubble, right?
Yeah.
Coaches, GMs, front office people, older people, people with comorbidities. It's not just the players we're worried about. If anything, the players, you know, probably have they're so young and healthy, they probably have the best chance of surviving if they get it.
But what about guys like Pop or D'Antoni? Yeah. Right. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So I've heard things, you know, maybe they're going to make them wear masks. Maybe they're going to make them keep social distance, you know, coach with a headset on.
Yeah.
Those are the kinds of protocols that I think are still being worked out.
Right. And as far as what did he ask about the protest, Laura? Do you remember what he asked about the protest before we go to break?
He just wanted to know specifically what the NBA is doing, because he felt that COVID is not the real issue that could stop the NBA. It's the racial injustice right now.
I don't think it would stop the NBA. I think that every team except, I guess, the Knicks have kind of come on board finally, has put out statements. You've seen a lot of players make statements. Some have even marched. I think they can do more. I do, right? I think they can, but I don't think that's anything that would stop the NBA season from coming back. I don't see how that connects. Do you?
Okay. No, I don't either, but I wanted to make sure we answer his question.
Okay.
All right. Coming up next, we'll take more calls. People have questions, a lot of questions about the NBA's resumption. 877-710-ESPN. We still got a couple open phone lines now. If you want to hop aboard, 877-710-3776. Also, the NFL has come across a little tone deaf in the last 24 hours. One head coach and one prominent superstar has said some stuff that has irked a lot of people. We'll tell you what that is in just a second. Momo and I will continue taking your phone calls and also getting into an NFL superstar who has said some stuff about the protest that will irk some people. We'll get to that in just a moment. Stick around. We're back in less than 3 minutes. Sedano with you here on 710 ESPN. Mama Momo hanging out today as she does every Wednesday, presented by Progressive Insurance. Get your quote at progressive.com today. Momo, before we get into something a little more serious here, an update on my house being flooded by my 18-month-old or 19-month-old. He grabbed the hose, came through the sliding door, wet the entire living room, and everything seems okay now. My wife, I think she may reach for the tequila early today, but go for the hard stuff right away. But I've been assured by her, as I asked how'd the cleanup go, she just said, "Oh my God." And then my 6-year-old said, "Don't worry, Daddy, we cleaned it all up." And I'm like, "Okay, cool." So,
nice.
That was
me the other night at dinner. Daniel just ate so much. Like, I made cheeseburger macaroni. Okay.
Ooh.
Like, that's perfect for a kid, right? So he's just like, he ate like two bowls of that. And then he wanted his, sometimes we do pudding for dessert. And I was, you know, softy. And I said, okay, you can have some pudding. So he starts eating the pudding and he's not that into it. I can tell he's like really full. I'm like, aren't you, you've eaten so much already, but I don't know, you know, you have a boy, you eat a lot. They're like going through growth spurts and stuff all the time. So I'm like, okay, so we're eating the pudding. And then all of a sudden he looks at me and he gets that look. I'm like, oh no, he's going to barf. That's like all over. And it's never just a little bit like, oh no, we're going to make room. It's like, it all comes up.
Yep.
So Nevin had been in the other room, like getting the bath ready, and he can't hear me. Right. So because the bath is like,
right,
like
the water's loud. Running. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
I'm like screaming like, no, get in here. It's all over the place. And finally, by the time he comes in here, I'm like, it's all over. You missed it. Yeah. But you're going to clean it up now. Yeah. Mommy will go do the bath.
Right. We'll switch here. Yeah.
Yeah.
So on a much more serious note than that.
Yeah.
So obviously, as we've been discussing, and we had the breaking news earlier that the attorney general who was added to the case of George Floyd, that Derek Chauvin has been upgraded from murder three, third degree murder to second degree murder, and the other three officers are charged and will be in custody or are in custody. And so in the NFL, there's been, you know, like every sports, right? Like every sport, there's been a lot of discussions about this. And we just played a great story, you know, piece of audio in the last hour of Sean McVay. You know, you talked about it, Ramon, a young guy kind of gets it. You know, he understands the pulse of his locker room and his team. And they had this big meeting and the players afterwards posted about it on social media, how they felt really good about it. So Vic Fangio, was on a Zoom call, who's the head coach of the Denver Broncos. And he, look, on this Zoom call, on the front end, I wanted to make sure I say this because I don't want to feel like we're just completely railroading him. But he talked about support for George Floyd and the, you know, it being a travesty that he was killed and all that stuff. He said all those things on the front end. He said all the right things, all the things that you would want to hear. And honestly, the things that happened, right?
Right.
But when he was asked about racism in the NFL, he then made a comment that has people all up in arms, and I don't blame them. And here's what Vic Fangio, Broncos head coach, said.
I think our problems in the NFL along those lines are minimal. We're a league of meritocracy. You earn what you get. You get what you earn. I don't see racism at all in the NFL. I don't see discrimination in the NFL. You know, we live in a great atmosphere. Like I alluded to earlier, we're lucky. We all live together, joined as one for one common goal, and we all intermingle and mix tremendously. You know, if society reflected an NFL team, we'd all be great.
Now, he is right about one thing. The NFL is a meritocracy. However, we have learned that, you know, there was a guy making a peaceful protest who led his team to the Super Bowl and has been blackballed from the league. Like, it just seems so tone deaf to say something like that. Like, what in the hell are you saying, Vic Fangio? Like, come on.
So the phrase that comes to mind when I hear that is blind spot.
Right.
Right. Like, you know, he's thinking about what you're saying, you know, the meritocracy of competition, of playing, of like, he's literally just thinking about how I coach my team on the field and how I make decisions about who's going to play and what positions they're going to play. Right.
Right.
But absolute huge blind spot about the giant social issue that has been hovering around the league for the last couple of years.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, it's just like, you know, if somebody would have just followed up and said to him, hey, but what about all the Kaepernick protests? You'd have been like, oh, yeah, that's true. Yeah, that's a good point. Right? Like, it seems like, you know, sometimes, and that's, I think, what people mean when they talk about white privilege. Like, you don't even know the, you don't even realize you have a huge blind spot. Right?
You nailed it.
You don't even know the ways you're privileged.
That's an example right there. That's it. Yeah. That's it right there.
Yeah. Oh, I never even thought about that. Oh, yeah, you're right. Good point. You know, right? Like, it's one of those, I read the beginning. The beginning of his quotes a lot better. Like, he expresses the right kind of sympathy,
right.
And
yeah.
You know, empathy and understanding. And then you go into this, and it's like missing a little something here. Missing
yeah,
it,
just a know? Tad, just a yeah. Tad. Yeah. Yeah, yeah. So this morning, now a superstar in the NFL has commented on this because of the Fangio comments, right? Like, so Drew Brees was on Yahoo Finance this morning on their digital show. And who knows what he was on to talk about. I mean, my guess is some sort of business venture, right? And yeah. He was asked by the business reporter, I guess, about Fangio's comments and about Colin Kaepernick. So he specifically was asked, I want to make sure I have the proper question here. He was asked about players kneeling again potentially when the NFL season starts. And here's what Brees said.
Well, I will never agree with anybody disrespecting the flag of the United States of America or our country. Let me just tell you what I see or what I feel when the national anthem is played and when I look at the flag of the United States. I envision my two grandfathers who fought for this country during World War II, one in the Army and one in the Marine Corps, both risking their lives to protect our country and to try to make our country and this world a better place. So every time I stand with my hand over my heart, looking at that flag and singing the national anthem, that's what I think about. And in many cases, it brings me to tears, thinking about all that has been sacrificed, not just those in the military, but for that matter, those throughout the civil rights movements of the 60s and everyone and all that has been endured by so many people up until this point. And is everything right with our country right now? No, it's not. We still have a long way to go. But I think what you do by standing there and showing respect to the flag with your hand over your heart is it shows unity. It shows that we are all in this together. We can all do better. And that we are all part of the solution.
Now, the packaging of all that stuff on the back end sounds right and sounds good, but it's just it misses the point completely. OK, first of all, as you and I both know, none of this stuff is about the flag per se. OK,
yeah.
As a matter of fact, for people that don't remember, and I talked about this actually yesterday. OK, Colin Kaepernick chose to kneel as his protest on the advice of a former teammate, Nate Boyer, who also happens to be a Green Beret in the Army, okay? Because that's how Nate Boyer, Green Beret in the Army, said that they would acknowledge the fallen, okay? So it was actually as peaceful and as smart a way as you could do it because he took the advice of someone from the bleeping military, for God's sake. Okay? Someone who fought for this country, much like Drew Brees' grandfather. And by the way, Ramona, as you would know, there's a lot of people who fought in World War II, including plenty black people. Okay?
Yeah.
So let's not exclude them from this conversation. It's just, again, tone deaf. It's hijacking the narrative when it doesn't need to be hijacked. This has never been about disrespecting the flag. He couldn't even acknowledge why Colin Kaepernick was protesting and the injustice. He went straight to that yeah. narrative about the flag. And it's just so disappointing.
Yeah. I mean, to me, that's always what the problem with the debate over the Kaepernick protest was that its original intent was lost very quickly. Right. The original intent of Kaepernick's protest was to protest police brutality and the systematic injustices against black people at the hands of the police. Right. And it was to do that by kneeling during the national anthem. It was not to protest the flag. Like, that got conflated in a really politically charged way very quickly. It was just, it had nothing to do with dishonoring the flag, nothing to do with dishonoring America. It was just protesting police brutality and systematic injustice, right? By kneeling, and I don't think once you decide something is one thing, right? Like, once you're Drew Brees, you just decide it's about disrespecting the flag. It's kind of hard to turn that around, right? Like, it's kind of hard to undo that that view of it. And I think there's just so many people in the country that only see it in that way.
Here's a great tweet. From Jamon Stoudemire, someone who's listening right now, says, He tweeted both of us. Don't forget, Fangio was the defensive coordinator in San Francisco when Cap was there. So, like, to have that blind spot. Now, it makes me think maybe it wasn't a blind spot, that maybe he thinks, maybe in the, and again, I'm projecting here now, that he thinks kind of like Drew Brees thinks, right? Maybe it is partially a blind spot, but maybe, Ramona, it's just this is their stance, and they're not going to be moved from that particular stance.
Yeah, that's interesting. Well, I mean, you know, on my side of it, I give people the benefit of the doubt, right? I read the whole quote. But what do I always say when I hear one quote? I go, Greg, what was the rest of that quote?
Right. You're right.
Yeah. And we read the whole thing. When I hear it, it sounds to me like a guy who's just really focused on the football field and has a giant blind spot when it comes to social issues.
Right.
Like it just
Breeze's excuse then?
I think Breeze heard it a certain way and decided that's what it was. And now no amount of you and I or anybody else pointing out to him that, you know, the background with Nate Boyer or what he was really protesting is going to change his mind. He's not open to hearing it.
God, it's insane to me. All right. We have a Marine on the line. Let me what's his name? Johnny. You're on the radio. Johnny, hello.
Hey, how you guys doing?
Hey, man.
Hey, big fan of you guys, especially Ramona. Been following you for a while. I'm just calling real quick. I'm an emotional dude, so you got me ramped up right now. I think what Drew Brees is trying to get at, I'm a service member. Did my time. I don't want to talk about that. It doesn't really matter. However, in regards to the kneeling with, like, Kaepernick and with that Green Beret, we're talking about absolutely right, man. We do take a knee for the fallen. However, we don't do that during the national anthem. And I think that's what irks a lot of people is that, you know, Kaepernick chose to do it during that time frame. And I think that's what Drew Brees is trying to say. Like, hey, man, you know, you can do it whenever. Doesn't matter. Just during the national anthem, that means a lot to a lot of us. I come from an immigrant family. I'm a first-generation American. You know, my family came from Mexico. And that was my way of giving back to the country that gave back to my family the opportunities that we had. So that's why I kind of side with Drew Brees in that aspect of what that means. And I think that a lot of people kind of twist that narrative. I know that it's not disrespecting the flag, but I think that there's a time and place for it. And I just really wanted to call and let you guys know that. I appreciate what you guys are doing during this whole time frame and a big fan of you guys. Thank you.
All right, thanks. You know what? Let's discuss.
It is.
Let's discuss that more on the other side, though, because we're way over the break. We should have gone to break like 4 minutes ago. So let's do that. Plus, I know people are on hold, and we'll get to you. You have questions for Ramona about the return of the NBA, the resumption of the NBA. We will continue to do that. We've got less than 30 minutes in the show, so we'll do that. We'll also kind of update you on all the news story that was broken earlier today, this morning, about the NBA's return and what that entails. So 877-710-ESPN if you want to get in on that or any of this discussion that we just had as well. 877-710-3776. So we'll do that. We're back in 2 minutes. Sit down over here on 710-ESPN presented by Progressive Insurance. All our guests appear via the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line. Ramona Shelburne hanging out with us as she does every Wednesday. So real quick, before we get to the NBA, I want to just kind of finish up the discussion we had with the gentleman who called, Johnny, who served in the military, and we thank you for your service. And we were talking about the Colin Kaepernick situation, and he kind of sides with Drew Brees on this. He believes it's disrespectful to the flag, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So I wanted to find this because I wanted to make sure I quoted this properly. So Nate Boyer was on Real Sports. This was a couple of years ago, okay? And he talked to Brian Gumbel about this specific situation. And I'm just going to read a little bit from this so we can all understand where this is coming from. So previous to Colin Kaepernick kneeling, he was, if you remember, Ramona, he was sitting on the bench initially.
Yep.
And Nate Boyer and him, because they were teammates, had this conversation. And he said, quote, this is what Boyer told Brian Gumbel on Real Sports on HBO. We sort of came to a middle ground where he would take a knee alongside his teammates. Soldiers take a knee in front of a fallen brother's grave, you know, to show respect. When we're on patrol, you know, and we go into security halt, we take a knee and we pull security. Asked by Gumbel if Kaepernick was receptive. He said, very receptive. He said, I think that it would be really powerful, Boyer recalls. And, you know, he asked me to do it with him. I said, look, I can't. I'll stand next to you. I got to have my hand on my heart. And that's just it. That's what I got to do where I'm from. And then Boyer says that after it came out that he suggested that this would be the best way for Kaepernick to handle it. He said he got a lot of calls from both sides. I was told I was a disgrace to the Green Beret by a couple of Green Berets. One of them I was friends with, and that hurts. It really does. But then I also had a lot of people in the military and people in special forces that said, man, I hadn't really thought about that before, and I think you're on to something. So, again, this isn't a blanket situation even within the military, but he does feel like the overwhelming majority of people that he encountered in the military would agree with the way he told Colin Kaepernick to handle this.
Yeah, it's interesting. Like, I think one of the other things too is that, you know, he actually did it a few times before anybody noticed.
Right.
Right. And then it just became co-opted into a sort of culture wars debate, and it really wasn't, it wasn't even his protest anymore. The thing that hurt Colin Kaepernick, at least, you know, on, in my eyes and a lot of people's eyes, was when he said he didn't vote. Remember that? That was later on. He said there's no difference between Trump and Hillary Clinton. He wore those socks that was sort of antagonistic, right? There were cops in a, I don't want to get it wrong, but he wore some socks that were sort of, you know, not great symbolism, right? And I just think the idea of like not voting, that was hard.
But
I think he hasn't been like the perfect messenger.
Oh, listen, Ramona,
and so you run
Ramona,
up against,
I'll add something else that's even more personal. Yeah. And I had this conversation on Twitter, which is never a good place to have it, with our old colleague Michael Smith, which we picked up the phone and just started talking to each other, because I made the comment that I'm with Colin Kaepernick. Like, I support him. Stand is probably not the right phrase to use there, but I support Colin Kaepernick. But I said I wish he was more up to speed on defending Fidel Castro and the oppression, and a man who would put people to firing squads, you know what I'm saying? Like, for religious freedom and things like that, because he didn't want any religious freedom and just literally was an oppressor, you know, who my family fled. So I mentioned that, and then Michael and I went back and forth on Twitter, and I just texted him and I said, listen, how about you and I get on the phone and have this discussion? And we did, and we had a very nice, normal discussion because he and I are friends. And you're right. So he's not perfect. I get that. However, I don't think that it changes that he sought the advice of someone who would be way more understanding and respectful of the tone of what he was doing and chose to take that route. And even that person had to deal with criticism.
Right. Well, the one thing about protests is that, you know, a lot of times in order to really affect change or get your attention, you have to make people uncomfortable. You know, you have to make people feel and see and not like what you're doing in order to get them to listen to you. If you just, you know, put a sticker on your arm or something, or you put a message on your eye black or something, it's not going to have the same effect. And when you do something that makes people uncomfortable and they don't like what you're doing, it calls a lot of attention to you, which is the point. But it also makes people uncomfortable. And and then you have to live with the consequences of that. And so, like, I understand the idea of, like, not liking the idea of dishonoring the flag. If you see the gesture of kneeling during the anthem as dishonoring the flag, I get where you're coming from. I do, because it's, you know, it's the national anthem and the flag and things like that. But in my eyes, I saw it for what it was. Like, he really was trying to protest police brutality and racial injustice. I really felt like it was an honest, genuine feeling that he had and he was expressing. And I'm okay with it because it's his right to do it. It's not something I would want to do myself. But I'll tell you what, that wouldn't be my choice of how to protest, right? I would do it a different way. But I'll tell you what, like, after, you know, I went to the women's marches a few years in a row when those were happening. And it's almost, you know, that the kneeling has become a symbol for all of it, right? A kneeling has become a symbol for protest in general, of protesting, you know, whatever it is that your cause is, right? And so I think it's just been co-opted in ways that Kaepernick never intended. And I don't know, to me it's unfortunate because the people who see it the way Drew Brees sees it, they're not listening anymore. They already decide what it's about, dishonoring the flag. I don't think that's what Colin was trying to do. I think he was genuine in what he was protesting. Right.
Well, again, if you seek out Nate Boyer, you know what I'm saying? Like that's there's a reason behind that. You know what I'm saying? So look, we got people want to talk about this. We got people want to talk about the NBA's resumption.
Oh, hey, got a little something for you from LA County.
Okay.
Guess what, everybody?
Go ahead.
Curfew has been extended, but you get till 9 o'clock tonight.
Okay. There you have
all
it.
All right.
So there you go.
Be home at six. That's a something.
Yeah. And of course, be safe because we're, you know, for a number of reasons, I thought yesterday there were a lot of great peaceful protests, much less, you know, violence and looting in this city and across the country, which I think is the way everyone wants it now. You know, George Floyd's family has talked about it. You know, all our civic leaders are talking about it. Guys in sports are talking about it. You know, in the African-American community as well. So make sure we do that. And of course, be safe because we're still dealing with a pandemic, as we've mentioned before.
Yeah.
And again, don't forget, Thank You Thursdays, presented by Valvoline Instant Oil Change here on 710. We want to salute all our frontline workers as part of our Thank You Thursday. If you know a frontline worker, obviously there's so many people in the healthcare community, you can nominate them by emailing ESPNLAMarketing@ESPN.com with their first and last name, their city, and their occupation. Or you can post a short video on Instagram or Twitter, including the hashtag 710 Thank You Thursdays. Every Thursday, we'll interview a frontline worker and award them a $500 thank you gift, which includes $200 service from the Valvoline Instant Oil Change folks, a $100 gift card from Wingstop, a $100 from VSLiquor.com, and a $100 from Shooteria.com. So make sure you do that. Thank You Thursdays. Post with the hashtag 710 Thank You Thursdays or email us at ESPNLAMarketing@ESPN.com. This segment brought to you by our friends at Sherman Williams. And don't forget to tune into the ESPN Daily Podcast, bringing you a deep dive into a single story with one of ESPN's hundreds of reporters, presented by Marathon. Download the ESPN Daily with our friend Mina Kimes wherever you enjoy your podcast. So,
George, I got something for you, though.
Go ahead. Give it to me before we get to the calls.
Okay. Well, when we come back, when we get back into it, we've got some clear favorites emerging from our poll of what it's going to be called when the NBA returns to Orlando. All right. Life in the bubble, under the dome, on campus. And then a suggestion from Bobby Marks that I think I probably should have put as one of the poll choices because it's really good.
Okay, just give it to me. We're not breaking. Just go.
Oh,
we're
going
to go right through.
Okay.
We're going to combine the breaks. You know what? We're getting crazy. Even corporate Greg is allowing us to combine breaks. So
really?
Go ahead.
Wow. I thought I was just like teeing you up. I was like, here we go. I'm going to
send look at that. That was good, though. That was really good.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. All right.
All right. Okay. Go. Give it to me, though.
With about 545 votes so far, all right?
Yeah.
Under the Dome is the clear leader. 47% for Under the Dome. Life in the Bubble coming in second, 26%. On Campus, 23%. And then the suggestion from Bobby Marks that I really like is Survivor Island. It's kind of like next to Fight Island.
But yeah.
It's Survivor Island. How about that NBA Island?
NBA Island. How about Basketball Island? Yeah.
Basketball Island.
Yeah.
That might be good.
Yeah. I like that. That's Bobby Marks' comment. That's straight talk right there.
I feel like we could riff on the idea of, like, you know what, Disneyland, it's Adventureland, Tomorrowland.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Basketball Land?
Yeah.
Should we call it Basketball Land?
I don't know. Give it to us. Give us the Straight Talk, brought to you by Straight Talk Wireless. No contract, no compromise.
Like?
Yeah. Yeah. I'm with you. I think let the audience come up with creative stuff. 877-710-ESPN, 877-710-3776. Let's go to the phones. We've got people holding on patiently. Alan is in L.A. Alan, I believe, wants to talk about the NBA first. So go ahead, Alan.
What's up, guys? Good show. Thank you very much. Question is for Momo. Let's say these NBA teams make it to the second round and somebody like Kawhi or LeBron tests positive. What are they going to do at that point?
Thanks, Alan.
Yeah, so I think that is that's one of the things they're working on right now. And I think that's why people have told me, like, you know, make sure – they're building in some buffer time, you know, they're building in some time to where if you have an outbreak, if you have, you know, setback like that, where it's not just one or two players, it's, you know, significant portion, they're going to have ways of dealing with that. And I think that's why it's not such a tight schedule. Like, they're going to be playing games all day long. I think there's three arenas there. They're either using two of those arenas or all three. So you're going to have games starting probably, you know, every day at 10, you know, 10 a.m. our time, 1 p.m. their time or something. That'd be my guess of when they'd start. But, you know, I think the initial plan calls for 7-game playoff series just from the very beginning. So then we're not going to have to change that up.
Okay, that's good.
They can play every day. There's not travel in between games. There's
right.
Not necessarily
they may just give guys a day off, though, right?
Here and there. But I think they also need to build in a buffer zone. So where if you had, I don't know if it would be like LeBron or Kawhi, you know, we stopped just because it's them. But I wonder if they need to build in some time. Let's say there's 4 or 5 guys on a team. You can't just say you forfeit the game. That's not fair.
Yeah.
You have to give them time to recover. And so we have to, like, delay the start of this round.
Right.
Delay the start of that round. Like, these are the types of real-world questions that I think everybody needs answers to. And we'll get those answers. I know the NBA is still working on it. And the players union still work at it. But I've certainly asked that many times. And I the only answer I can get so far for you is that there are going to be plans for it. There is some time that's sort of a buffer. To where if they need to, like, stop for a little while, they can.
Let's go to Dustin in Inglewood. He wants to respond to Johnny, the serviceman who called earlier when we were talking about the Drew Brees situation. Go ahead. Dustin. Hello, Dustin. Dustin in Inglewood? Hello.
It's your moment, Dustin. Come on. It's your moment.
Okay. I guess we'll try some other time. Call us back if you'd like. Let's go to Eric in Torrance, who wants to talk about Kaepernick. Go ahead, Eric.
Hey, good afternoon, guys. I just want to start off by saying I'm very disappointed in Drew Brees. I never would have thought that he would be so absent-minded not to be able to see the logic and the whole purpose for why Kaepernick kneeled. But the thing is, I can easily, as an African-American, I can easily say that my ancestors died for this country just the same. Mm-hmm. And when I stand for the national anthem, I stand out of respect for them and their sacrifices they made for me and my kids. Now, here we are today in 2020, and we as African-Americans can barely get the respect of the police. You know, I'm an electrical engineer. I went to Tuskegee University, you know, and I feel like that as a young black man, I shouldn't be afraid of the police. I shouldn't have these fears. I should be able to live comfortably in America just like any other ethnic group should, and not have to worry about when I get pulled over, what's going to happen next. So when it comes to kneeling, my thought on that is that it's not a disrespect to the national anthem or the servicemen. It's about the fact that all we're asking for is respect. If you can't give us respect, then I can't respect America right now because of the fact that we're not being shown any kind of, you know, you know what I'm saying, decency.
Yeah, of course. You know?
And so ultimately, that to me is what the kneeling was. It's not, I'm so grateful. I have many friends who are in the military who are police officers, and I have nothing but total respect for all of them. I think they put forth, you know, their lives to save mine. So therefore, I have respect for them. And I know that all cops are bad.
Yeah.
But nonetheless, those small few ruin it, just like these looters.
Yeah.
The small few looters are ruining the message that we're trying to convey.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, totally agree.
So I've actually gotten, like, that's the one thing that
Thank you, Eric.
Thanks. Good call, man. That's the one thing that, like, you know, I keep trying to say and deal with is, like, man, like, the spirit of the protest. I've seen so many videos. I've had friends who've been out there on social media or just friends who walk the streets. Like, the majority of these protests are peaceful protests. Their heart's in the right place. And then they're being used and taken advantage of by opportunistic people who want to loot.
People who are really antagonistic. Yes, by nature, and that's it.
And
they're using it as an opportunity.
Their message, and it's really upset. I mean,
well,
me,
Ramona,
I would be upset.
It's you know why? Because if you're one of these antagonistic groups or individuals, you've got easy cover. Oh, the minorities are protesting. I'm good.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, and it'll get blamed on them. That's the way they look at it.
Yeah, there's antagonistic groups, and then I think there's also opportunistic people.
Sure, individuals too. Yeah.
Shopping spree, right?
Yeah.
And you know, it's frustrating for all of us because I think everybody, you know, wants to stand with the protesters. And I think, George, that would be my guess as to why we haven't seen more athletes, you know, speak out quite as loudly about this, because it is becoming conflated, right?
Yeah.
The looting and the violence versus.
But now we're seeing. But last night, for the first time, we saw a lot less looting.
Yeah.
And I think that maybe because of that, you'll see more and more athletes come to the table.
Yeah, I hope so.
Let's talk to Peter in L.A. who wants to talk about the NBA resumption. Go ahead, Peter.
Okay, so about the NBA resumption, I have two questions here for Ramona. Rebounding, passing, blocking, stealing, and just teammates and running into each other. there could be a player who has it or who is a carrier of it and does all these things, passes the ball to another. What is the NBA doing about that?
Yeah.
And then the draft positions for the teams who aren't playing. Do their draft positions stay the same? And these new games, do they hurt or, you know, help another team? And then the teams that are playing, do their positions get switched around depending on how many they win or lose?
Yeah, so those are both really good questions. The answer to your first question is testing. They're going to test people so often that they feel reasonably confident that you can play basketball, which is a contact sport, right? There's a lot of times. It's not like in baseball where, you know, we've been watching the Korean Baseball League and it's like somebody slides into second and it's like, ooh, don't get too close, right?
Yeah.
Like you have a
yeah,
lot
yeah,
of
yeah, yeah.
They're going to be bumping into each other. They're going to be breathing on each other. They're going to be sweating on each other. Like, that's basketball. The NBA feels that if they test people enough, and that's going to be daily, and by the way, it might be more than daily, okay? It might be rapid tests and overnight PCR tests. So PCR is the gold standard. That's the one that takes 4 hours to get results.
Right.
We don't always have 4 hours. They're going to have temperature checks, so they're going to over-test people so that they feel reasonably confident they'll catch people who are symptomatic who might have it. The answer to your second question actually comes from my buddy Mark Spears. He says, via the new rules, NBA teams with the three worst records this season will each have a 14% chance of winning the lottery. So that's Golden State, Cleveland, and Minnesota have the three worst records, with Atlanta, Detroit, and New York behind by a hair in the standings. Okay. Difference in lottery odds between the first three seeds is 14%, and the fourth seed is 12.5% will be 1.5%. The difference between the fourth and the fifth seed, 10.5% will be 2%.
Right. Okay, so and so on and so forth. Yeah.
So on and so forth. So they just kind of adjusted it to the eight teams that are not there. They kind of have the certain lottery odds based on kind of the way they did it last year. A little bit weighted top three. We're going to have some issues, though, when we get to, when are we going to do this draft?
Yeah, I think that is a big question. Dennis in Downey. Dennis in Downey, my favorite place to eat Cuban food at Tropicana. Dennis, I got 30 seconds. Go.
All right, this will be as quick as I can make it. NFL has one of the most exceptional opportunities to make a change in our political and social system.
Yep.
What they need to do is hire Colin Kaepernick either as a consultant or as a player or both.
Yes,
Have him demonstrate what that means to kneel at the time of either the flag or some other time.
Dennis, I gotta run because we have a hard out here. I have to go to commercial because the show will be over, but you are 100% right. I agree with it. We'll talk more about it tomorrow. The NFL should bring Colin Kaepernick back. Joe Lockhart, former exec, talked about it yesterday. We'll talk about it more tomorrow. Momo, thank you for...